teenage wasteland. It's only a teenage wasteland.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, the age crime curve. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Well, hello. Hello, Tommy, the teenage dream queen.
Well, no.
Been a while.
Ask my mother if I was a teenage dream. I'm sure she's going to say no to that.
Okay.
More like a teenage nightmare.
Oh, wow.
I was mommy's little monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got into some trouble when you were a teen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I never got arrested, but I was pretty darn close. Mm-hmm. So.
What kind of teenage hijinks did you get up to that you can share on air?
Well, let me see. I want to say is my babysitter's fault, because when I was 12, my babysitter took me to a high school party. And they thought it was funny to give me a beer. So that's when I actually started drinking.
Oh,
was at 12. No. Yeah.
You're fired. Your babysitter's fired.
She's fired. And then I started hanging out with bad kids and, you know, but yeah, I didn't really get anything into any trouble that would get me arrested as a juvenile.
Trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, me either. I was kind of a goody two shoes.
Yeah. You were very good compared to me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I did like, you know, hang out with some boys, and we did, you know, went around and did some light vandalism and stuff. But
did you take any baseball bats to mailboxes?
Yes.
That is something that rural males specifically seem to enjoy doing.
And political signs and paintball guns. We did some, paintball gun shooting at satellite dishes and things like that. But I may have drank like one or two times before I was 21, but I really didn't do much underage drinking.
I was hitting several of those juvenile delinquency indicators, let's just say that, but you know.
Yeah. I was, even with the vandalism, it was still kind of like maybe after high school.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
Mm-hmm. So not too bad, but both of us did get into a little bit of trouble.
I stopped getting into trouble probably about my junior year of high school. So I was kind of late in terms of like getting it together a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I did get it together, and look at me now.
You already been through your whole teenage delinquent career before I even started mine.
Yes, I had.
Getting it together at 17.
It all changed when I got a car, but we can talk about that later, I guess. Then I had responsibilities and fun and good times. Things, you know, stakes in conformity, we would say.
Yeah, for sure.
So the age crime curve has something to do with teenagers and crime, I have surmised from this conversation.
Yeah.
So tell us more, please.
Yeah, we've been talking about the criminal delinquent activities that we got up to when we were teens. But the age crime curve was first identified by Belgian astronomer / mathematician / statistician / sociologist Adolf Quetelet, and I had to look up how to pronounce that because I had no idea.
It's French.
But it's spelled Quetelet.
Yeah. How do you think an average American would say that, not knowing any French?
I would have said Quetelet if I hadn't have looked it up. But it's Quetelet.
Yes, a jack of all trades, if you will.
Yeah. And apparently he did a whole lot of things. Most noteworthy, he developed the body mass index, BMI.
Yes, which is a bunch of baloney, but go ahead.
Yeah, but he found that crimes peaked in the late teen years, or that a disproportionate number of people arrested were in their late teens and early 20s.
Right.
So the age crime curve is basically the graph or chart that criminologists would put together with like ages of people on like the x-axis and the number of crimes or arrests or whatever measure of crime committed on the y-axis. And this invariably leads to a picture with like a big curve or a hump in the late teens to late 20s. And of course, depending on the data source, the exact years and age ranges may be offset by a year or two.
Right.
But this basically leads to the picture that a lot of street crime that's committed is committed by people in their late teens to early 20s.
Right.
So, for example, in 2012, data indicated that individuals aged 18 to 24 made up 11% of the U.S. population, but accounted for 30% of arrests.
Right. And I was mm-hmm. at the end of my criminal career mm-hmm. by 16. So, yeah.
Wow,
beat
there
that.
You go. Yeah. But essentially, we start to see the number of crimes committed by people steeply increase in the teenage years, peak in the late teens, early 20s, mid-late 20s, and then dramatically drop off by the early to mid-30s. And criminologists talk about those as the crime-prone years, or the late teens to early mid-20s.
Gotcha.
In developmental terms, criminologists refer to onset as the process where teens initiate criminal behavior. That's basically like when they start committing delinquency, or they start their criminal careers. And then desistance is the process of like stopping committing crime, or the ending or termination of a criminal or delinquent career.
Right. And the area of criminology where folks study offending and how it differs or is affected at different stages of aging is referred to or called developmental and or life course criminology.
Yeah, in a paper that I was reading to prep for this episode, the author used DLC as the acronym for yes. developmental life course criminology. But in the gaming world, DLC stands for downloadable content.
Oh, okay.
And usually that's like a game comes out and then the DLC releases like weeks or months later. And it's usually like new levels or new activities that you can do. So like you've played your favorite game and you're finished, and then you can like look forward to the DLC coming out.
Do you pay
out.
For that extra DLC?
It depends.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes.
Okay. But as a gamer, I do not mm-hmm. know that.
Yeah. sometimes they're like a price that you have to pay for that. But my favorite DLC ever, Valhalla for God of War Ragnarok, was totally free.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice.
And, yeah, I didn't have to pay for it. And it's probably like the best DLC I've ever played. As we've said several times already, DLC ultimately and consistently indicates that the majority of street crime, like violence and theft, is committed by folks in the mid to late adolescence to early adulthood.
Okay, so what is a criminogenic about the teenage years? Why do teens commit a disproportionate amount of crime?
Well, we've defined that term criminogenic before, but as our listeners may be able to infer, it basically means generating crime. So something that's criminogenic is something that generates or leads to or causes crime. And of course,
we never say cause.
Yeah, right. That's our social scientists shudder because hard to establish causality in social science. But when I talk about age and crime in class, I usually divide it into like the explanations to two major discussions, the biology of adolescence and the sociology of adolescence.
So tell our listeners what happens biologically during adolescence.
Well, first of all, your body starts to change.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
You might notice like hair in places.
Yes.
That you didn't have it before. Yes. But there are significant biological and, especially for our purposes here, hormonal changes during adolescence. And particularly in males, puberty is related to an increase in testosterone.
Yes.
And testosterone is associated with aggression in violence. But, more generally, we can recognize the way that significant hormone changes can have behavioral consequences.
Yes, we talk about mm-hmm. testosterone a little bit in my mass and serial murder class this semester, mm-hmm. along with things like neurotransmitters and hormones and that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. it is a sort of chicken egg thing with testosterone and aggression in terms of what comes first, because mm-hmm. we know that high levels of testosterone lead to aggression, but also after aggressing, mm-hmm. if you measure, there are higher levels of testosterone in males.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a vicious cycle.
Testosterone, the hormonal mm-hmm. vicious cycle.
Yeah. And then if you think about, teenagers in general, they just have, lots of energy and and strength, and they're in the vigor of their youth. So opportunity wise, teenagers just have more physical capability to meet the demands of physical activity, like fighting and stealing and running away from the police or running away from somebody
home.
Else. Yeah. I was just thinking, like, if I had to run away from somebody or something right now, I probably would just like lay down and surrender.
just like, give up.
Whatever. You can catch me. You can have me.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, teens biologically yes. are in the bodies of adult, but might still have the minds or brains of kids.
Yes. So, you know, running away. Mm-hmm. I tried that once and my mom nailed my bedroom window shut. Because that's how I got out. So, and so I was confined to the room.
Preventing future escapes.
Okay, so they haven't psychologically or cognitively matured, correct?
Right, so the body matures faster than the mind. Teens, you know, for example, lack psychological or cognitive maturity. Their impulse control hasn't developed. We might say they have a lack of inhibition. You've probably heard the old adage that the brain or the frontal lobe doesn't fully develop until you're 25.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of a myth I was checking out.
It varies.
Yeah, maybe it's more of like an oversimplification.
Right,
and
it is.
25 is kind of an arbitrary number.
Yes.
And there are certain parts of the brain that basically continue developing and changing all throughout your life. But neuroscientists agree that brain development continues largely into the 20s, particularly the prefrontal cortex, which is closely tied to higher level thinking.
Right. We interrogate this a little bit in my class as well about whether personality, for example, is stable over the life course. Mm-hmm. So is that all we have to talk about biologically?
Yeah, that's all I've got.
Okay. All right, moving on.
Anything else you want to talk about teens' bodies?
No, thanks. Okay, good. Okay, so moving on to the social aspects of adolescence.
Yeah, it's interesting that you put it that way, but like think about adolescence essentially as a maturity gap.
Right.
And in fact, the social phenomenon or experience of adolescence or being a teenager is actually a relatively new modern type of thing. So I like to think back to my grandparents, which all of my grandparents were like adults before World War II.
Okay.
Mine
were as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, they, you know, all started their own families and farms as soon as they were basically biologically able to start producing children.
Yes.
And there wasn't a big pressure back then on them to finish school. Like several of my grandparents like finished school when they were in middle school or the seventh grade.
Right.
So, and that was just common. You're done with school then.
Yep.
So adolescence and the social phenomenon of being a teenager really emerged after World War II, particularly in the 1950s in our modern era of life. But ultimately, when kids started staying in school until they were 18 or 19, but now, you know, adolescents or teenagers, they're biologically mature, but they're treated like kids. So it's this phase where, you know, kind of like you're not an adult, but you're not a kid, but you're still being treated like a kid, but you have the body of an adult.
Yes.
And you're searching for independence and you want to act like an adult and you want to be treated like an adult. So you kind of reach out for those adult behaviors and things like substance use and delinquency and crime may be a way to assert your adulthood and assert your independence. And you see like, you know, quote unquote, the bad kids and your older siblings doing these things and they look cool and they look grown up. And so you do them too in your quest for adulthood.
That was me in smoking, my quest for adulthood. Besides, I'm from Kentucky and every single person around me smoked. So it was kind of like the thing you do when you hit 15. Mm-hmm. So in addition to this maturity gap, the increased freedom of adolescence reduces adult supervision and social bonds. Yeah. Teenagers are supervised less than they used to be by parents and teachers. And as you're trying to find out who you are and what your place in life is as a teen, you look more to your peers maybe rather than your parents and teachers.
Yeah, and criminologists would call this like weakening social bonds related to adolescence. So if when you're a teen, you're kind of like less attached, less close to your parents and teachers and less committed to school and grade. And like having friends and being popular is more important. In teenage delinquency specifically is most likely to happen when teenagers are hanging out with their friends away from home, outside of adult supervision, and when they're not engaged in kind of organized activity. And criminologists refer to this as unstructured socializing. So unstructured teenage socializing is the social context where we see most delinquent activity happening. And it's also important to note in several studies that the kids who didn't commit crime and delinquency in adolescence were basically the exception. They were kind of like the oddballs. Yeah, like me. Teenage delinquency and hijinks are like so prolific that if you don't get involved in at least minor delinquency when a teen, you're kind of like the weirdo. You're the goody two-shoes.
Right. So we've talked about why teens are at a high risk for committing crime in their teen years, but why do they stop?
Well, I mean, there's always the risk that, you know, if you're involved in delinquent and criminal behavior as a teen, you can get caught up in serious trouble, like develop a drug habit or, you know, kill somebody in a fight gone wrong or get arrested and have that criminal record follow you into adulthood. But research indicates that most adolescents who are involved in delinquency eventually do stop, desist. End desistance, as we said before, is the ending of the criminal career or trajectory.
Transitions and trajectories.
So like by the late 20s, early 30s, at most people involved in criminal activity stop. But if we look at crime largely through this lens that adolescents are committing crime because of their biological maturing process and because socially they're trying to be an adult, then once you do mature, there's really, you know, not that same motivation to commit crime anymore. So like once you grow up and get a job and a spouse or a partner and a home and a family, then the activities that made you look cool and feel grown up can actually threaten those adult things that you have, like, you know, drugs and theft and violence, not real conducive to having a stable career or a great home life. So people stop doing those things. They desist.
Yes.
And one thing I've thought about a lot recently, because like all of my nieces and nephews now are teenagers or about to be teenagers, but like being a teenager now is way different than being a teenager when we were teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
For sure. Having a cell phone. Do they all have cell phones and social media?
Yeah. The two oldest have cell phones. The next two have had them on and off. They have them for a while,
and they
get them taken away for a while, then they get them back. But cell phones, social media,
internet. My independence was my car. So once I was 16 and I had a car, and I started working as soon as I was able. So I was working at 15, and then that just changed things for me. I mean, it turns out all I needed was better family, better friends, and something to do. And then my criminal career was kind of over. Luckily, I did not develop a drug habit or anything.
Well, but that's interesting because usually that car is kind of like your ticket to freedom where you can start exploring and getting out and doing
it. It was just such
it
was freedom. So I didn't want to lose it. And I had to work, you know, to pay for insurance and stuff. So those stakes in conformity, right? And then, you know, I was just on the right path.
Yeah.
My trajectory went this way instead of that way, but it could have gone other ways. People that I grew up with and were friends with, you know, it also, their trajectories were completely different.
Yeah. I'm really glad there wasn't cell phones or social media.
Because all of this stuff would have been captured and it would have been harder to get rid of that sort of delinquent identity, I think. It would, you know, because videos and like image and everything that was bad about my teenage years would have been amplified with cell phone use and social media.
Yeah, and if you think about like problems at school, I heard my sister talking about this, who has three kids. You know, like when we were in school, if you have problems at school, you go home and you can kind of get away from it. But now with cell phones and
cyberbullying
there's no escaping your friend problems at school.
Well, kids these days.
Kids these days. And I mean, there's always that idea that kids are worse now than they've ever been. And definitely I think that, you know, being a teenager is harder now than it used to be. But surprisingly, kids and teens these days are a lot less delinquent than they were back in our day.
Yeah.
And some criminologists have actually begun to speculate that perhaps the age crime curve is changing, which is rather a radical idea because for a long time, the data on the age crime curve was so consistent and so overwhelming. There were some criminologists who basically said like, okay, this is just a social fact. It's invariant.
It's a social fact.
We don't need to explain it. It's just a fact of human development that, you know, crime and delinquency peaks in teenage years. But recently there's been some data and indication that social context and historical factors may actually shape the age crime curve or can alter the peak crime prone year. So for example, Data in 2019 showed that arrest rate by age was actually pretty flat during the 20s and kind of peaked and started dropping off in the early 30s. So the age crime curve now, compared to a couple of decades ago, perhaps has kind of flattened and moved to the right by about 5 to 10 years. And there's some more evidence that indicates that perhaps criminal careers are now being developmentally delayed longer than they used to be. So that maybe like the late 20s, early 30s now are more likely to be the peak crime-prone years rather than the late teens, early 20s.
Right.
And basically, you know, the explanation for that is that kids these days are taking longer to grow up. What do you think about that?
Why in the world would you want to grow up? Take a look around. What looks interesting or fun or like, am I going to have the, you know, the ideal job, you know, be able to buy a house?
I mean, this is somewhat related, but kind of a totally different tangent. I used to listen to this like linguistics podcast.
Oh, that's right. I remember this one.
And the host of the podcast was, I don't remember if there was a whole episode about it or what, but basically he was kind of talking about like slang, this particular form of slang that's relatively new where, you know, it's kind of funny to do like baby talk. I remember the example he used was like, you know, oh, we do all the things, kind of like things that aren't like maybe grammatically correct and sound almost like kid talk.
Yes.
And he was kind of speculating that, you know, it's, you know, kind of a result of this notion that like adulthood is not something that is really sought after anymore. That it's scary, particularly after like 9/11 and the recession. Being an adult is like super scary, and kids don't want to. It's better to stay a kid than to be an adult. And when we were teens, at least for me, it was like, oh yeah, I want to be an adult.
Oh, me too.
I want to get my car. I want to have freedom. And kind of like, you know, the and maybe this is anecdotal, but the observation that like kids are not in a hurry to get their driver's license these days.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine why you would want to be a kid. And you, as a millennial, are you an elder millennial, technically?
I think so, 81.
Yeah, I mean, millennials are really the ones out here saying, like, look, what did you expect from us? Mm-hmm. You know, given our short time on this earth already, we've lived through all of these things. All the things. Yeah, so, you know, Gen Z, and younger, like, I can't, it's hard to predict what 15 years in the future is going to look like, but well, I don't know.
But I mean, like some of these ideas about the age crime, or most of what I'm going to talk about, you know, in a moment, comes from an article in Criminology and Public Policy by a criminologist named Wayne Osgood. And his article was basically called "The Rise and Fall of the Teen Culture of Independence." And basically, that's what he's arguing is creating the age crime curve, this teenage culture of independence. So we kind of talked about, you know, like the rise of adolescence.
Yes.
But like, you know, think about like the classical 1950s idea of like teenage culture in high school, like Greece and rock and roll and American graffiti. In the 50s was really when like the teen culture of independence started, where teenagers were staying in high school, where they started having cars, where they started working outside of the home as teenagers. And, you know, particularly at that time, they were kind of expecting marriage and family to happen relatively quickly after high school. So high school was kind of that moment where you graduate high school and then you get a job and get a family. So the argument here is that in that conception of adolescence, the teenage years are basically the beginning of an adulthood, of adulthood. We're almost adults. We're seeking independence. We're seeking adult privileges. We're in high school. We're going to be adults after we graduate. So let's have fun and do the adult things now before we have the responsibility of being adult. And as we kind of just talk, many people argue that that has changed. And now even, you know, less so, they're like, oh, I don't want to be an adult, but just the nature of adolescence has changed. Most teens go on to college now, fewer work full-time jobs or part-time jobs in high school and college. It's also a lot easier now with technology to monitor teens.
Yes.
I know there's, it's called like Live Safe or Life 360 or something like that.
Yeah.
But basically it's an app that you can put on your kids' phones and you can track exactly where they are and you can see like how fast they're going in their cars. I mean, it's like, I'm glad we didn't have internet, but I'm definitely glad we didn't have that app to track us.
I was already caught someplace I wasn't supposed to be, and my dad in a police car came to pick me up in a different county. So that was without this technology.
Busted.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, this idea that kids are taking longer to grow up and they don't want to grow up. Adult life is hard and stressful and terrible, and being a kid is easy and great, and let's keep doing that.
Yeah, I would like to regress. I don't want to be an adult anymore.
I mean, I definitely don't want to go back to high school.
No,
and I don't want to be a little kid anymore.
No.
But I would definitely go back to my 20s, I think. Yeah. Do my 20s over again. But basically, there was a quote in this article that said, adolescence now is more of an extension of childhood rather than the beginning of adulthood. So it's really interesting to think about it, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the age crime curve over the next decade or so.
Yeah.
So what's your spin, Tommy, in just a minute?
Okay, so in the words of our dear departed R&B singer Aaliyah, age ain't nothing but a number. Unfortunately, that was the album that was produced by her, you know, like the man that she married, R. Kelly, who some of you might be familiar with, because she married him at age 15 and he was 27. Oh, and, you know, there are several documentaries on R. Kelly now. He turned out to be a very bad guy.
Yeah.
So it kind of had to do with that. But, you know, I think it sums up the whole point of this episode is that age is just a number, and these conceptualizations about the age crime curve may be changing based on other factors that have nothing to do with your biological age.
Yeah, exactly.
Ben, what's your spin?
Teenage wastelands. It's only a teenage wasteland.
I thought you were going to do Katy Perry.
which would be what?
Teenage Dream.
Oh, Teenage Dream.
I'm not even going to try to sing.
I couldn't tell you what the tune to that is off the top of my head. I do know Firework. That's about the only one I know off the top of my head. But anyway, it's interesting to think about the age crime curve, and like you said, how modern life and technology may be changing it, and unstructured socializing is the thing that most agrees kind of the biggest opportunity factor. So keep your teens out of trouble by knowing who they are, where they are, and track their cell phones.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website, linked in show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming.